My name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here. We're so glad that you could be here with us today as we continue on in another week of the series that we are in today. I want to begin this morning by sharing with you one of the things that makes me most nervous, actually, when I meet someone for the first time here at Midcurrent Church. The thing that makes me most nervous when I hear this, and it happens more often than you might think. It's not a bad thing, so don't worry if you've ever said this to me before. It doesn't make me angry, doesn't make me upset or unhappy or whatever. It just makes me nervous when I hear it. The one thing that makes me most nervous when I hear someone new tell me this, it's this. It makes me most nervous when I hear someone tell me that they come and that they like Midcurrent Church because it's small. And I actually hear this quite a bit. Some people just describe themselves as small church people. Again, that's not good or bad. It's not right or wrong. It doesn't make me upset. Doesn't make me angry with you. It just makes me nervous for you, because here's the reality, right? Here's the reality that I don't know how long we will be this small. I just don't know. Truth be told, we're already quite a lot bigger than when we started, yet I get it, still in the grand scheme of things, we're relatively small when you're talking about a church. But the truth is, I just don't know. We're not, you know, planning anything or one way or another. I just don't know how long we'll be this small. I don't know when we'll be bigger. I don't know how big we'll ever be. But what I do know is this, and this is something that I believe with all of my heart, right? That as long as we have friends, as long as we have family, as long as we have neighbors, and as long as we have coworkers who do not know Jesus, who have not had their lives impacted by Jesus, then we're not big enough. We don't have size goals. We're not saying we have to be X big or Y big. We don't have any size goals. I just really believe that as long as we have friends and neighbors and coworkers who do not know Jesus, then we are not big enough. I've said it before that I think a healthy church is a growing church. Not every growing church is healthy, but I really do believe that a healthy church is a growing church. And I hope that both are true of us for years to come. I'm excited to say that I think both are true of us. I think this is a healthy place. We're only 1 year in, so there hasn't been a whole lot of time for things to get funky yet. I'm sure I'll screw something up real soon. But until then, I think this is a pretty healthy place. I might be partial to this place, but I think that's true. And the other truth is it's growing. If you didn't know it, Midcurrent actually started with about 30 people who called this place home. A little over a year ago, when we set out to do this, it started with 30 people who called this place home. Now it's double, triple, even quadruple the number of people who would call Midcurrent home. It's pretty incredible to me. And very exciting in so many ways. But here's the deal, right? Here's what this kind of series that we're getting at is all about. Anytime a church gets larger, okay, whether that's 30 to 60 or 30 to 90, whether that's 100 to 200 or 200 to 500 or 500 to 1,000, anytime a church gets bigger, it's got to find ways at the very same time to get smaller too. Right, so as this church grows, we're going to work hard to make sure that you don't. And truthfully, you got to work hard to make sure that you don't let yourself get lost in the shuffle. I think that's the fear for people when they describe this kind of, hey, you know, we like a smaller church. At the end of the day, I don't know how much people really care about the size of a church, right? They just want to get lost in the shuffle. At the end of the day, you're still, whether you're in a church of 50 or 500, you're still sitting next to one person on your left, one person on your right, one person in front of you, and one person right behind you. And I think people just want to know those people. They want to be known, and they want to know the people that are sitting around them. And we want you to know them, and we want you to be known here. And so that really is the heart behind specifically the first 2 weeks of this current series that we are calling Growing Smaller. Right? Anytime a church grows larger, which is happening to us, we've got to find ways at the very same time to grow smaller as well. Last week, we said that one of the ways that we can grow smaller like this is to move out of these rows and into circles together, to get to know one another, to no longer just stare at the back of someone's head, but to stare to someone face to face, right? We want to get to know one another. We want to make friends with one another, and we want to support one another and hold each other's arms up, as a little we talked about last week. We saw last week that sometimes the difference between victory and defeat. We looked at a story of God's people during the days of the Old Testament. We saw that sometimes the difference between victory and defeat is just four extra hands. of someone willing to carry the load with you. If you missed that message, we'd love to have you hop online and learn about why we believe it's so important that we move from rows into circles, why we move into these kind of smaller groups together. Those groups are starting this week. There's still time to sign up. There's still space for you to jump in. You can get information at a registration site we set up at midcurrent.churchcenter.com. So I hope you check that out, and I hope you find a way to move out of rows and into circles together. But that brings us today. We're in week two of this series called Growing Smaller. And what I want to say today is that the second most important step for us to take, actually the second step for us to take to grow smaller is what I want to talk about today. The second step that we take to help us grow smaller as a church. And what I want to talk about today, I actually think is one of the fastest ways, maybe one of the most effective ways to grow smaller, for any church or for any community to grow smaller. Small groups are awesome. We want to move from rows to circles. That is all so good. But what we're going to talk about today, I actually think is the fastest way, the most effective way to help any church or any community to grow smaller. And I just want to tell you what it is. I think the fastest way, the most effective way for any church or community to feel smaller is to start to serve together. Right, to be a part of a team together, to work alongside someone together for a common goal, to roll up your sleeves together, to get your hands dirty together, to sweat together, to laugh together, to work together, to accomplish together, to succeed together, to impact together, to influence together. And we want you to have the chance to do that as long as you are a part in any way of Midcurrent Church. We want to give you the chance to do that. But what I want to suggest today is that the first step toward growing smaller in this way, that the first step toward being a part of a team together, the first step toward joining a team, it doesn't begin on a sign-up sheet. It doesn't begin with you writing a little note on the tear-off portion of that card and dropping it in the box. The first step toward you becoming a part of a team and serving alongside with someone, it doesn't begin in an email from you to us or from us to you. I think it's a step that begins well before that. I think it's a step actually that begins deep down in our heart. It's a step that begins with a shift of an attitude that I think that exists deep down within us. And speaking for myself, I know and wonder if maybe some of us aren't in need of that kind of attitude shift or that kind of attitude adjustment. Because if I can just be honest here, sometimes I'm shocked with myself at some of the attitudes, at some of the self-centeredness that exists even in me. Sometimes, and I'm just being honest, sometimes I don't have an attitude that wants to serve others or that wants to give myself to others in the way that I should. For instance, here's just a small example. It's just the other morning. We're sitting around after breakfast, and my two kids are off playing by themselves together, which is always a good thing, okay? And I'm still sitting at the counter drinking my coffee, and my wife, Erica, was standing just conveniently behind me. In a very casual way, just so none of you start thinking I'm going in a different direction here, in a very casual way, I pointed to my shoulders, and I said, "Hey, Erica, let's trade back rubs. I'll go first." And she agreed. Okay, so I was in business, and as my turn started to wind down, right, as the clock started to wind down on my turn, I started thinking to myself, I'm just being honest here, I started thinking to myself, I wonder if Erica will actually make us trade spots. I found myself wondering, maybe hoping, if I'm being honest, I found myself hoping that as my turn wound down, maybe she'd say, "Nah, I'm good. Don't worry about me." That she'd say, no, Stan, you've been working hard. This one's for you. You just enjoy. I'm happy to do this for you, Stan, my amazing and great and talented and hardworking and selfless husband. This one's for you." Okay, this is just Wednesday morning. I kid you not. I told her about this. These are the thoughts going through my head. Maybe she'd just say, "Nah, don't worry about me. And this just be for me." Okay, now in case, ladies especially, in case you're like gasping, how could you do that? I'm no dummy. Okay, I didn't let that happen. I made good on my end of the deal. But I'm just being very honest with you. And I was honest with her. These are the real thoughts going through my head. And the truth is, here's why I tell you this little story. The truth is, this is not the only place. This is not the only place where that attitude creeps up in me. It's not the only place where I have to stop myself or catch myself from hoping or assuming that people would do things for me just because of how great I am or how deserving I am of whatever I'm hoping they would do for me. It's not the only place this kind of attitude creeps up in me. Any of you know that feeling? Like you deserve something or you're almost entitled to something because of something about you. I'm not necessarily saying that it's always in a malicious way that this kind of attitude creeps up in us, but I'm thinking that we all know that feeling, that somehow because of something about us, our age or maybe it's your gender, your experience or your education or your intellect or your income or your job or your role or your title or your status or your significance, you're thinking maybe something means that I might just be on the receiving end, that I might just be on the receiving end of people's goodwill, and that all of it might be evidence. It might be the proof of really how great I am. You ever feel this way? It's this feeling where you're just kind of tempted to think mostly for yourself, tempted to kind of just push yourself to the front of the line or kind of push your way to end up on top. I just wonder if more people feel the same way. I know that I do. I have to admit that. And so I've just started wondering. I wonder if the same is true for you. And so in light of all this, right, the question then for me became this. The question then is, how are those of us who call ourselves Christians, how are any of us for that matter, how are we supposed to live a better life in this kind of me first, power hungry, self-promoting world? Because that never leads me to where I want to be. Right, so the question is then, how do we, those of us who call ourselves Christians, how do any of us really live a better life? Is there a better way to live? And if so, what does that even look like? The good news, thankfully, is that I think the Bible gives us some of those answers. What's written and what was recorded and what was contained in the Bible, I think gives us some of those answers. So here's what I have happen. If you have a Bible, grab it or look to the side screens. We're going to turn to look at the Gospel of Mark. This is simply Mark's, a guy named Mark. It's his account. It's his memory. It's his recording of the life and the ministry and the days of Jesus. And interestingly, what we see in Mark's writing here is that this very attitude, this kind of power hungry, this kind of me first attitude, it was an issue even then. I mean, even back in those days. And the truth is, Jesus' closest buddies, the guy that we called his disciples, some of them were the biggest culprits. And when Jesus sees this in them, he doesn't let it slide. And so what we're going to look at here, as we look onto the side screens, we're going to see that Jesus calls them and he calls us to live in a little different way. As we look on from the sidelines here, we're going to see that Jesus is trying to teach them and trying to teach us that we're supposed to be living in a radically different way than the rest of the world. So here's how it all unfolds. Jesus and his disciples, they're traveling together as they often did, and Jesus takes a quick moment. He calls a timeout to talk to his guys, to fill them in on what is to come, especially for him, to fill them in on what's to come. Here's verse 33 of Mark chapter 10. It says this, "Listen," Jesus said, "we're going to Jerusalem where the Son of Man," that's him, "will be betrayed to the leading priests and to the teachers of the religious law, and they will sentence him to die and hand him over to the Romans." And then he says this, "and they will mock him, and they will spit on him, and they will flog him with a whip and kill him, but after 3 days he will rise again." Okay, that last part there, that's the good news of the actual resurrection of Jesus. And by now, the disciples are, they're starting to put some pieces together. By now, they know enough to know that means in some way that Jesus will take his rightful place, rightful place of honor in the kingdom of God. And two of the disciples, they see this, okay, that they see what's happening. They know what's about to come, and they see this as their opportunity to capitalize. They see this as their opportunity to wiggle their way to the front of the line. Here's verse 35. "Then James and John," it's the brother and the cousin of Jesus, "then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they came over and spoke to him. And they said, 'Teacher, we want you to do us a favor.'" It's a strange request, isn't it? The timing is just a little bit off, if you ask me. Jesus just shares some bad news. I mean, if you think about it, Jesus shares some tough news, and then their very next breath, they're asking for a favor. Jesus shares bad news. The very next thing out of their mouths is saying, "Hey, Jesus, can you do us a favor?" Fellas, do not try that at home, okay? Bad news, you ask for a favor, okay? Never ends up well. Nonetheless, In this moment, Jesus plays along. Look at verse 36. He says to the guys, okay, I'll bite, he says. Verse 36, he says, what do you want me to do for you? He asks. And here's what they want. They say, when you sit on your glorious throne, because they know where this is going. They say, when you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in the places of honor right next to you. One of us on your right and the other on your left. Can you hook us up? We're in the family, brothers, cousins. Like, hey, could you hook us up? We want to kind of find our way to the front of the line. Isn't this great? Jesus is entering the final stretch of his life on earth. Right, the time that these guys have been together, for the last few years, and it's all coming to a close, and these guys are still just thinking only of themselves. They see this as their opportunity to cash in. Still, I mean, as kind of unthinkable as this is, Jesus is unfazed. Here's how he replies. He says to the guys, you don't know what you're asking. Essentially, he's trying to explain to them. He goes on to explain to them in the verses that follow. He goes on to explain to them that hanging out close to Jesus, it comes with a price. There's a price to pay, but they assure him, no, we're up to the task. And so this conversation continues back and forth. And all of a sudden, the other 10 disciples, there's 12 of them. It's just James and John, bargaining for some side deals here. And so all of a sudden, the other 10, they get wise to this, that they start to tune in to the conversation that's happening. Here's verse 41. It says, when the 10 heard about this, when they heard James and John jockeying for position, they became indignant with James and John. And they start fighting amongst each other. This is such a great picture to me of how just kind of self-centered we can be. Jesus is telling, I know I've said this a few times, but I just want us to be clear. Jesus is telling his closest friends that this is it. That this is their, that these are some of their last moments together. That it's all coming to an end. And he's saying, hey, this is it. I'm going to miss you guys. And how do they respond? They say, hey, we're going to miss you too. No, they start fighting about who's the greatest among them, who's going to kind of wiggle their way to the front of the line, who's going to end up finding themselves on top. And Jesus sees this as a prime opportunity to teach them something. And it's the same something that I want us to see and to hear this morning. Verse 42 says this, Jesus called them together and he said, look, fellas. He says, you know that the rulers in this world, they lord it over, they hold it over their people. And the officials, they flaunt their authority over those who are under them. He's saying, look, fellas, you know this. That's the default. That's the MO of leaders around you, the guys that you see in places of authority, in places of leadership. That's how it works. And I'd argue in some ways that it's not all that different today. But Jesus is telling them, hey, this is how the leaders in the world operate around you. And then here's what he says to them. Here's what I want us to see. He says, this is how those guys operate. But you guys, he says, no, not so with you. He's saying it's going to be different. It's going to be different with you. He's saying, you guys want to be great? Okay, fine. The script is going to flip. He says, okay, instead, whoever wants to be great among you, because that's what you guys want. He says, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first, whoever wants to get to the front of the line, whoever wants to end up on top must be a slave to all. For even the Son of Man, he says, that's him. God's own son, the one who had all of God's authority and power at his fingertips, he says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. You see that shift? It's a shift that happens in our hearts and in our attitudes. I think it's a shift from receiving something to responding to something. It's a shift from receiving to responding. Jesus said, I did not come to be served. In the Greek language that this was originally written, and that's a passive verb, that something is done to you or something is done for you. So Jesus came to earth with all the authority, with all the power of God at his fingertips, all the authority in the world, but he's saying, no. That's not what that authority was meant for, so that people would be doing things for me or doing things to me. That's receiving. No, Jesus says, no, 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 no. I came to this earth with that type of authority to influence others, to serve and to give. And both of those, if you look at the original text, both of those were active verbs, doing something. That's responding. It's a subtle shift in our hearts and in our attitudes from receiving to responding. Jesus is telling his guys, look, fellas, every other leader that you know and that you see around you in the world right now, they're all about receiving. They're all about leveraging their influence, leveraging their authority for their own benefit to prop themselves up, to make sure that they end up on top. And he says, not so with you. He's saying it's going to be different with you guys. You're going to be about responding. You're going to be about leveraging your influence, your leadership for the good of others. And the point he's trying to make is that that is what true greatness is all about. The point that he's trying to instill in them is that is where true greatness really is found. I had to learn this the hard way. And in some ways, I'm probably still learning it today. A number of years ago in my past, and for quite a few years, I was having trouble finding my groove. Specifically in my own leadership. God had actually time and time again, he had placed me in some pretty awesome, some pretty incredible positions of leadership and influence and authority, even if you will, even at a young age, a number of times. Even at a young age, I had been given some pretty significant platforms to speak from and to lead from. Few times as just a young kid, I was given time and time again another opportunity, another platform to speak from and to lead from. And here's the deal, I was never happy. People were hard, expectations were high, the demands were firm, the criticism was harsh, the evaluation and the feedback, it wasn't always very kind. And the whole deal, every time, it was hard. And what happened is I got bitter. I got bitter. Because in my mind, okay, young kid trying to figure out life on his own, in my mind, I'm going, if I'm so gifted, like everybody told me I was, if I'm so great to have been given all these positions of leadership at such a young age, then why is this all so hard? It must be someone else's fault. I'm thinking, you know, why aren't people just rolling out the red carpet every time I walk by? Why aren't people applauding everything I did and cheering on everything that I said? Well, why weren't people lining up to stroke my ego whenever they could? And the truth is, I didn't get it, and I was miserable. And I knew at a certain point, I cannot go on like this any longer. So here's what I did. I ended up paying a lot of money out of my own pocket. I ended up paying a lot of money to go and learn a very simple but life-altering and course-correcting lesson about myself. Came to a point where I said, I can't go on like this any longer. I got to do something about it. So after a lot of convincing, I finally said yes to attending a men's weekend that a former pastor and friend of mine had long been encouraging me to attend. And so after a lot of convincing, I finally said yes to attending this very expensive men's weekend. And let me be clear, it was not your typical men's weekend. It was not some men's retreat where you go and sip hot cocoa and, you know, sing kumbaya by the bonfire or, you know, by the fireplace. It was far, far, far from that. It was an intensive and an uncomfortably challenging weekend that was designed for men to take a hard look at themselves, to take a hard look at what is and what isn't working. And unfortunately, I can't go on to describe everything that I experienced, but I can tell you the one simple lesson that I learned along the way, that for years, I had been operating from a place of weakness, looking for what other people could do for me, looking for how other people could tell me how great I really was. But what I learned is that I needed to, and that God had equipped me to operate from a place of strength. that looked for what I could do for others. What I learned in this weekend, very simple but life-altering lesson, is that, yeah, God had gifted me and equipped me in some of the ways that I thought he did and some of the ways that I hoped that he did. That was true. He had equipped me like that, but not for the purpose of what it meant for me, but for the purpose of what it could mean for others around me. Place of weakness and moving to a place of strength that look to say, God, what have you done for me and what can I then do for other people? There hasn't been a day that has gone by that I haven't tried to instill that into my own family and my young kids, that God has blessed us in some pretty incredible ways, not so that other people would notice and not so that other people then pile on more blessings onto us, but that God had blessed us, that God had been good to us so that we could be good and so that we could be a blessing to other people and to the world around us. My oldest daughter now, her name is Lucy, she's going to 4K in the afternoons now. And I try to remind her of this every single day before I say goodbye. And I think in some way in her little head, I think it's starting to click with her. Every day I get down close and I pull her up close to me and I look her in the eye and I say, Lucy, you gotta remember that God has blessed us so that, and then she finishes my sentence, so that we can be a blessing to others. And I send her off to school. And I pray that she lives into that every single day. And I pray that the same thing would be true for those of us here today. Because here's the deal. Some of us have been given some pretty incredible gifts. Some of us have been given some pretty incredible creativity and innovation. Some of us have been given some incredible skills and ability. Some of us have again been given some pretty incredible positions of influence and positions of leadership and positions of authority. And each of us get to choose then how we're going to use that influence, how we're going to use those gifts that God has given us, how we're going to use those positions that God has put us in. We get to choose every day how we're going to use what it is that God has given to us. And so the question isn't how do I leverage my influence and my giftedness for my benefit, so that I can get ahead further and faster. Now the question is, how do I leverage whatever authority, whatever influence, whatever giftedness, whatever leadership I have, how do I leverage it for the benefit of others? That's where real greatness is found. The truth is, as time goes on, I think we'll find, if we haven't already, we'll find plenty of opportunities with the gifts that we have and with the places of leadership that we have. We'll find plenty of opportunities to lord it over other people, to hold it over other people, to use it to our own advantage. But my hope in those moments, I hope that we would hear Jesus maybe whispering into our heads, not so with you. I hope we'd hear him reminding us, no, it's gotta be different with you. For even the Son of Man, the one who is entitled to it all, he came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many, to give his life as a ransom for you. He came not to be served, not to receive, but he came to serve and to give. I hope the same would be true for you and for me. I think it all comes down to that shift. It's a shift from receiving to responding. And we want you to have the opportunities to respond. I think you have the opportunities in your places of influence, in your family, in your place of influence and leadership in the community, and in your places of work. You have the opportunity to respond. At the very least, we want you to have the opportunity to respond here. We want you to have the opportunity to respond here at Mid-Current Church. The truth is, we have teams of people at this church who are working together. They're working hard together to leverage the gifts that God has given them to make a significant, to make even an eternal impact in the lives of other peoples. We've got a team of Mid-Current Kids workers that are gifted to invest in your kids and our kids every single Sunday to create the most fun, the most safe, the most exciting place for the littlest lives here at Mid-Current Church. to be impacted during some of the most formative years in life and faith. We've got a first impressions team, one of my favorite, working hard to create every Sunday the best possible first impression, to create the most welcoming and the most hospitable atmosphere for every single person that walks through our doors. These people aren't just holding open doors and pouring cups of coffee. We know you know how to do that. But these are the people that have a heart and have a gift to smile and to welcome and to engage people that are walking into the doors of our church for the first time in a long time, or maybe the first time ever. These are the people that send the message, we've been expecting you, and we're really glad that you're here. Right, it's a setup crew. They call themselves the Roadies. They set foot here early in the morning before anybody else does to create the environment in here that everybody loves. It's a production team, and it's musicians who use their gifts in music and technology, right, and audio visuals to create the most compelling presentations of the best news and the best story ever told, helping us to tell it and to continue to tell it in the most effective ways possible. It's a leadership team, people who are gifted in leadership and finances and strategic planning, who have the gifts to ensure that this place continues to have a greater impact in the world for decades to come. It's an outreach team of people who have a heart and who have a gift to respond to this community, the places that we call home, to meet the needs that exist right here in our own backyard, and to make this world and to make this community a better place. And these people, I'm just, they're here today. These people want to meet you. They're going to be available in the back to talk to you, to tell you more about what they do and how they'd love to have you come along for the ride. But let me just close with this. Here's what I really believe. I really believe that there is a spot on this team, on our team, that only you can fill. We really believe that there is a gap that exists that God gifted only you to respond to. And here's what happens when you do. Here's the beautiful thing that happens when you and I respond to these things. Here's the beautiful thing that happens when you and I respond rather than just receive. And when we step into the work that God is doing around us, here's the incredible thing that happens. Number one, you make a difference. You make a difference in the life of a kid, or in the life of a family, or in the life of a marriage. You make a difference in the life of this church. You make a difference in the life of this community, or in this world. You make a difference in the life of those who are lost, those who are lonely, or those who are hungry, or those who are hopeless, or those who are brokenhearted. You make a difference. And number two, when you start to serve together like this, this place gets a whole lot smaller. The people that you make coffee with, the people that you set up chairs with, the people that you teach kids with, the people that you serve in this community with, they start to become the people that you talk about life with. And they start to become the people that you look forward to connecting with on Sunday and beyond. And I hope that both of those things would happen here in ways that we could have never, ever imagined. Starts with a shift in our hearts. A shift from receiving to responding. And I pray we'd all have the chance to do that in ways that we never imagined were possible. Let me close us in prayer. God, we give you thanks for what's happening here. It's incredible to look that just a year ago, we opened these doors for the first time. God, we're blown away by your goodness to us. We're blown away by the ways that you have provided for us. And we're blown away, God, by the things that are happening in our lives and in our families and in our marriages and in our kids and in this community around us. And so, God, as we continue to do the things that you've called us to, and as we continue to take steps forward in the life of this church, and as we continue to grow, God, I pray that you would help us to find ways to not only step alongside you, God, to contribute to the ways that you're working, God. I pray that that would happen in just unimaginable ways, God. But I pray that as this place grows and as we take another step forward, that we would find more and more an opportunity to call this place home, God. That as this place grows, it would grow smaller at the very same time. That we would be known here, that we would know people here, and that this place would be home. And so, God, we ask for your help in doing these things. We ask that you would lead the way. We ask that you would receive all the credit for all good things that happen here, God, as we lift up your name and as we do so alongside one another, God. We pray for the impact that we have, and we pray for the relationships that exist here in this place that you have created in the St. Croix Valley, God. We give you thanks, and we do pray all these things in your name. Amen. So good to have you here. Those people that I mentioned, they will be back at the welcome desk, looking forward to getting to know you. Looking forward to the ways that you can begin to impact the work of this church and the needs of this community and the ways that you can begin to get to know other people here. So we'd love to have you stick around and get to know them back at the welcome desk. The coffee is still hot. There is some cake here that is meant for us to just celebrate before it gets sliced into it. It says Midcurrent is one. And that's something that we're really excited about. So we pray that you'd stick around and have fun as we celebrate here this morning. And then we hope you come back next week as this series, Growing Smaller, continues on for the third week. I hope to see you then. God bless you.